Hi there. Today I want to talk about money laundering in all its glory. You know, I've started this podcast, which I've named The Laundromat. And of course, unsurprisingly to most of you, it's about money laundering and its effect on our beautiful planet Earth. So one side of the coin of our discussions can be anything you want it to be on money laundering. Why do they do it? How do they do it? Where do they do it? And who are the money launderers? The other side of the coin is about our global pushback attempts to stem the tide of this scourge. I mean, what are the issues, the frustrations, the misunderstandings, the unknowns and the complexities, the concerns, and let's not forget the regulators, the regulations, and, dare I say it, the changes we have to make to our anti-money laundering initiatives to keep up with a rapidly changing world. Last year, several significant money laundering scandals involving amounts exceeding $1 billion emerged globally. So here's just a smidgen of the billions of dollars laundered last year, just to warm us up on the subject. TD Bank, which is a Canadian bank that also operates extensively in the United States, in October last year pleaded guilty to violations of the Bank Secrecy Act and the conspiracy to commit money laundering. The federal court records shows that between 2018 and 2021, TD Bank employees helped a network led by Dai Ying Zizi, referred to as Zizi Network, to launder millions in cash from illicit sales of fentanyl and other narcotics through their branches. The bank agreed to pay over $3 billion in penalties. So bank executives knowingly endangered American lives and helped dangerous criminals from China and elsewhere expand their fentanyl trafficking operations in the United States. High-level executives were involved. It's almost unbelievable. But so far, are these perpetrators being indicted? Nope, nothing so far. And just think of the sad consequences to society. On the other side of the world, former Mozambique Finance Minister Manuel Chang was convicted in August 2024 for his role in a $2 billion fraud and money laundering scheme. He was securing loans for state-owned companies under false pretenses and leading to significant financial losses for his country. Will those losses ever be made up? No. And think of the consequences on its people in an already marginalized country. It's very sad. And then there is the insurance magnate, Greg E. Lindberg, who pleaded guilty in late 2024 to defrauding insurance regulators and policyholders in America of over $2 billion. Well, Lindberg and his associates misused funds from over 100 companies globally under his control for his personal gain, concealing these actions from regulatory bodies. Gosh, he's been a crook for many years. And if you read the details on Wikipedia, it makes for very interesting reading. But again, how society was affected. So sad. In December 2024, the United Kingdom's National Crime Agency dismantled a multi-billion dollar money laundering network. This network provided services to various illicit actors, including Russian and international elites, cyber criminals, and drug gangs. There's still a long way to go for investigations on this one. The illicit and dangerous drug trade was a big reason that we started instituting money laundering initiatives in the first place. But it grows exponentially, irrespective of our efforts to stop it. So hard out there. But what about the growth in scams? It's a small word, scam, and it makes us put this in a different category because it kind of indicates its individuals are being careless about their money. But scams are growing exponentially and finding its way in businesses and among individuals along with the growth in the digital ease of moving money and moving it quickly. Cybercriminals impersonate executives or vendors, tricking employees into transferring funds or sensitive data, and this has cost businesses billions globally. There are fraudsters who send fake invoices, posing as legitimate vendors and often changing bank details to divert payments. Small and large corporations fall victim to this, of course. Employees or contractors misuse their access to steal money, data, intellectual property. And what about expense fraud and payroll fraud? And then there are shell companies that are used to create fake businesses to secure contracts, launder money, or siphon funds from legitimate firms. And this is a common procurement fraud. Or fraudulent suppliers provide substandard goods, falsify certifications, or charge inflated prices. This too affects industries from pharmaceuticals to construction. Cybersecurity is an important thing. Cybercriminals encrypt a business's data and demand a ransom to restore access, and that cripples operations. But cybercrime is big business these days, and many businesses pay to recover their systems. I mean, what choice does a business have? How do you start all over again with your systems? So basically, anything can be a scam. And scams that many of us see every day. I was getting a spate of several calls within a few weeks, ostensibly, from my bank's fraud department to tell me there had been suspected fraud on my bank account. But when I say thank you, I will phone the bank myself and find out. Phone call drops, or there are protestations that they are the bank. They are extremely good at what they do, and I've played around with some of those phone calls before I say that I will phone the bank. And I'm aware that they have great insight into human behavior that contributes to their success. I mean, scam is such a small word, but that small word affects millions of ordinary people. How are these scams linked then to money laundering specifically? The stolen funds are moved through a network of money mules or shell companies before being layered into legitimate financial systems. And criminals make rapid transactions across multiple jurisdictions to evade detection. Fake invoices can originate from front companies that exist solely to launder money. They generate bogus transactions to move illicit funds under the guise of business payments. Have you heard of the Scattered Canary Network, whereby cybercriminals in Nigeria targeted the United States companies by impersonating executives and requesting urgent wire transfers? They also used fake supplier invoices and email spoofing to convince employees to send payments to fraudulent bank accounts. The funds are then immediately moved through a network of money mules and withdrawn in cash or sent to overseas accounts. Well, how does this connect to money laundering? The funds are layered through cryptocurrency exchanges and mobile money services to avoid detection, and some proceeds are used to purchase luxury assets such as cars or watches and reinvested in real estate to legitimize the money. In this particular instance, the FBI cracked down on this operation, but similar scams generate billions in losses globally. There is also the OneCoin Ponzi scheme, which was worth $4.4 billion. This OneCoin scam was led by Ruja Ignatova, infamously known as the Crypto Queen. She promised huge returns on fake cryptocurrency investments. Millions of victims worldwide bought into the scheme, but no actual blockchain existed. It was all fabricated. Money was funneled through a complex web of shell companies and offshore accounts. OneCoin also moved billions through Dubai-based banks, Hong Kong shell companies, and Caribbean tax havens. Wow, making use of all the best ways of money laundering. Cash withdrawals and real estate purchases in London and Bulgaria were also used to clean the money. Well, the crypto queen disappeared in 2017 and is still one of the FBI's most wanted fugitives. And although the co-founders were arrested, most of the stolen money was never recovered. When there is such movement of money, which countries must be paid the tax? Residency-based or source-based? I doubt if anybody did. You know, most tax laws, the perpetrator still has to pay tax on illegally earned money. Yeah, right. That's so. Also, the Danske Bank's $230 billion laundering scandal. That was a very complicated scandal, and it was between Estonia and Russia. How it worked was Russian oligarchs and criminals used anonymous shell companies in Estonia to move money. Then fake business transactions were recorded through the Danske Bank's Estonia branch, and bogus invoices and trade transactions justified massive transfers of money. Now, the connection to money laundering there is that the funds were disguised as legitimate business payments before being transferred to the European Union and the United States banks. Some of the dirty money financed luxury real estate in London and Dubai. Danske Bank paid billions in fines, but many of the beneficiaries still remain unknown. Go figure. Did the beneficiaries ever pay tax on it? I doubt it. What about the Chinese underground banking network, which involved Mexico and China? How that worked is that Mexican drug cartels laundered drug money by buying Chinese consumer goods, such as clothing and electronics. These goods were shipped to Mexico and resold, generating clean profits. Chinese underground banks facilitated the process. But have you ever heard of underground banks? By exchanging pesos for yuan without touching traditional banks. So criminals bypassed bank transfers and reduced AML scrutiny. Profits from drug sales appeared as legitimate business earnings from trade. Chinese underground banking networks, they acted as alternative financial systems, moving billions outside formal channels. Law enforcement agencies struggle to combat trade-based money laundering like this due to high volumes of legitimate trade masking illicit activity. Yeah, tax was paid on some of it, and if it was, which was the lucky country who got it? Just think of the taxes that countries are losing. Never mind the actual fraud and corruption. The colonial pipeline, there was a dark side attack on that in the United States. Here, hackers shut down the largest United States fuel pipeline and demanded a 4.4 million ransom in Bitcoin. They paid the ransom to restore operations, and the funds were sent through crypto tumblers, which are mixing services, to obscure their origin. Please do not ask me to explain this because I have no idea what it means, but information tells me that criminals used privacy coins and crypto mixers to break the transaction trail. So some funds were cashed out through Eastern European money launderers who converted Bitcoin into cash, you know, like through an ATM. In this case, the FBI recovered about half of the ransom by tracking Bitcoin transactions. But you know, interestingly enough, this morning I heard on CNN about Argentina's president, Javier Milei, who is facing a fraud investigation after promoting a cryptocurrency that collapsed within hours, vaporizing billions in value. So from Forbes, I took this information that on Valentine's Day, Milei took to X to promote a little-known token called Libra, claiming it would boost Argentina's economy by funding small businesses. His post linked to a website featuring his signature slogan, Long Live Freedom, and assured his 3.8 million followers that the world wants to invest in Argentina. Thousands did, and Libra skyrocketed from near zero to almost $5 before crashing to under $1 within hours. My last example is two Estonian nationals who pleaded guilty for their operation of a massive, multifaceted cryptocurrency Ponzi scheme that victimized hundreds of thousands of people from across the world, including in the United States. And as part of the defendant's guilty pleas, they agreed to forfeit assets. To forfeit assets valued over $400 million, which they obtained illegally. So the global impact of trillions lost seriously undermines our economies. The industry of fighting money laundering requires resources, specialized knowledge of the law, from implementing just a financial service to catching the perpetrators. So the industry is also up against powerful and rich people who flout the law and they get away with it. They can pay for facilitators to do their taxes. International tax laws are so complicated that the average person is unlikely to know or understand them, whether business or personal. And then they have plenty of little people who will do anything for a little money. There is such a world of poverty out there, very often the fault of governments. You cannot easily blame people for looking for ways to feed their families, even risking their own lives to go to other lands for desired milk and honey. You know, legislation and regulations have never been more complicated. We're adding to it every day. And globalization and technology have mixed outcomes for money laundering and anti-money laundering initiatives have only added to those difficulties. This podcast needs your experience, your insights, your knowledge, and your opinions. Forensic accountants, anti-money laundering investigators, cybercrime specialists and regulatory experts, blockchain forensic analysts, we're looking for you. What are the biggest red flags you have seen in scam-related laundering? Why are anti-money laundering controls failing? What is the best investigative techniques now with AI? How do criminals adapt to avoid detection, and what are the future threats in financial crime? Why do we care? François Valéron, chair of Transparency International, had this to say. Corruption is an evolving global threat that does far more than undermine development. It is a key cause of declining democracy, instability, and human rights violations. The international community and every nation must make tackling corruption a top and long-term priority. This is crucial to pushing back against authoritarianism and securing a peaceful, free, and sustainable world. The dangerous trends revealed in this year's Corruption Perceptions Index highlight the need to follow through with concrete action now to address global corruption. That statement leads me to my next podcast on politics, rule of law, and tax as affected by money laundering. Plenty to discuss on that one, and controversial too.